So my name is José Bové. Listen to health writers if you are concerned about the health of the body politic.
Good evening and welcome to Health Writers on the Air. I'm your host this evening, Steve Blank. I'm sitting here with Matt Dannenberg from the Wisconsin League of Conservation Voters, and Matt is here to discuss the proposed mining legislation bill, Assembly Bill 426, which seeks to give the mining industry special exemptions to environmental and public health protections so that they can pretty much tear up a stretch of pristine land in the Pinocchio Hills just south of Lake Superior. Now, proponents of the bill want to allow the mining company, I believe I'm saying this right, Matt, Gogebic Tekonic, to operate an iron mine that they say will create much-needed jobs and, you know, that the company will not damage our health or our water supply and that they're going to practice what they call environmental stewardship and so on. Now, Matt, your organization, the Wisconsin League of Conservation Voters, is having pretty much having none of this. Before we get into specifics about the bill, describe the primary reason for your opposition to Assembly Bill 426.
Sure. Simply, it's bad policy. This bill, crafted by, mining lobbyists, interest at Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce, and like you mentioned, Gogebic Taconite, or more easily said, GTAC, G-T-A-C, definitely had a hand in writing this bill. And, some of the main reasons why we're in opposition to this is because it silences the voice of the public. It removes contested case hearings, which provide opportunities for public to challenge data and question mining officials on the record. It rolls back common sense environmental protections, things that protect our public health, our drinking water, and things that are essential, to life.
Okay, we'll go into those.
Sure.
Specifically, you mentioned something about community input. There's something written in the bill that limits community input?
Yeah, like I mentioned, the contested case hearings, this is a big opportunity for a citizen to question the mining company on, some of their data that they collect and maybe, biased or, we want to make sure it's legitimate. It removes that opportunity for citizens, and I can give you page numbers where the bill does this. It also removes the citizen's right to sue for illegal environmental damage by a mine. And it only requires one public hearing for the entire mining project, which current law requires a minimum of three. So there's a few examples right there how this bill limits public voice in the mining process, and when it affects things like water that are in the public trust, the public should have every opportunity to have their voices heard.
Absolutely. You mentioned also that GTAC, we'll call them, as you suggest, had a hand in writing this bill. And that seems to be the trend these days. Certainly that's what happened with Obama's health care bill. The insurance industries got in there and wrote the legislation. And it's interesting, not only did they do that, but they also funded a study. I was reading in the Ashland Current that North Star Economics produced a report in April that touted all of the jobs that will be brought on by this mine. But that study was paid for by GTAC. And the Bad River Band, their attorney, Glenn Stoddard, is saying that it's very slanted. It's not an effective report, and they're calling for another report. Have you heard about that?
I've definitely heard the North Star study. I myself have not reviewed that, so I can only speculate. But, again, going back to contested case hearings, that's an opportunity for citizens to contest data like that these industries pay for and put out there. And without that opportunity, you know, we can't challenge that. So I think, you know, Glenn Stoddard did the right thing proposing, you know, another study be done, or non-biased study by, you know, the DNR. Because it is likely that that data would be slanted.
Sure. Mike Wiggins, the Bad River Tribal chairman, he actually wrote a letter to Scott Walker saying that it would be foolhardy to base economic numbers on the North Star study. Now, you're a Native American. How much of an influence does that have on your perspective on this bill and environmental issues in general?
I've said this to a lot of people. I think this, you know, makes it much more than just a work commitment and something that touches on my conservation heartstrings. It makes it almost personal. I think, you know, the water is something that the indigenous people of Wisconsin hold very dear. It's one of their things that they harvest for their subsistence. It's essential to, you know, life. And I think that's what's under threat here. And, you know, the indigenous people of the state are not going to back down when there's this legislation out there that threatens that that resource.
Yeah, I'm not sure. There's so many things we could talk about. Let's start by talking about the DNR, because they're obviously supposed to be in place, the Department of Natural Resources, to protect our natural resources. But, you know, when Walker first took office, which was, what, 13 months ago now, 14, one of his first moves was the appointment of Kathy Stepp. Now, she's been a longtime critic of the Department of Natural Resources, but he put her in charge of the DNR. And Walker said at the time, "I wanted someone with a quote-unquote Chamber of Commerce mentality to run the agency." Now, the DNR is mentioned repeatedly throughout the bill. I was reading it yesterday, and they are kind of they're supposed to act as a final arbiter in deciding whether or not to allow all these exemptions to existing laws on the books. Matt Dannenberg, when it comes to our health and our conservation of our natural environment, can the people of Wisconsin possibly be represented by an agency headed by Kathy Stepp?
That's a really great question. You know, I think what we've seen over the last several years is more influence of politics in the Department of Natural Resources, and that's something that's very troubling. And we've seen, you know, campaigns over the last decade to reestablish an independent DNR secretary, someone who won't have, you know, a biased political, you know, motives in their decision making, and rather, you know, ideally hold our protection of our natural resources and our public's health in the highest regard. And not only, you know, is the politics at the level of the secretary, but also at, you know, several, from what I've heard from DNR employees, that in every separate department at the DNR, you know, they've also appointed, you know, I guess you could say cronies or department heads that are political figureheads and have no natural resource background. And it's quite frustrating to a lot of them, because they have to train their bosses on natural resource information, and they're put in place there simply because of their political motives.
Yeah, I know some people who work for the DNR myself, and they're so highly trained and they're so dedicated to the environment. In fact, I know some people who moved to this state from other states to work for the Wisconsin DNR simply for their love of Wisconsin's environment. And now they find that they're working for people who basically are friends of the Chamber of Commerce and the WMC, and they're powerless.
Yeah, I've, you know, traveling around the state to different events, I meet lots of folks that have retired from DNR or, you know, currently work there, and they've expressed those same sentiments, that it's frustrating. They're trying to do what's in the best interest. They're pursuing a career that they're passionate about, and a lot of them are, you know, disenfranchised because of this.
You know, I'm reading through the bill here. There's one section where it says, under this bill, this is a quote from the bill, the enforcement standards and preventive actions limits established by the DNR and the Department of Human Services continue to apply to iron mining operations. Well, that sounds good. But then further on down, it says, under current rules, the DNR may reduce the horizontal distance to the boundary of the design management zone of the mine on a metallic mining site if certain conditions are met, but they may not expand it. But under this bill, the DNR may not reduce the horizontal distance of the boundary of the DMZ on a metallic mining site, but may expand it by an additional 1,200 feet. So, you know, if you read that, it almost sounds like the DNR's role has changed from protecting the environment to making it available as a resource to manufacturers.
And that issue specifically was touched on at great length by Representative Milroy at the hearing in West Dallas. You know, what good does the expansion of this zone, provide for the state of Wisconsin? It seems as though we're allowing these companies to go off and pollute more groundwater and make more of a mess. And then at the same time, we're limiting the amount of years that they have that they're responsible for reclamation. And I just don't see how they're going to be able to clean up all that mess.
Yeah. Let's talk about the water, the groundwater. The bill specifically states that groundwater contamination is acceptable. How do you think this proposed mining will affect our water supply?
Yeah, that's a great question. And, touching back on, the rights of the American Indians, there's several treaties that are out there that basically establish a relationship between the sovereign nations of the Ojibwe and the federal government and their relationship to the states. And they have reserved rights to subsistence of not only hunting and fishing and wildlife, but their water and their wild rice. And with the pollution of this groundwater, the amount of sulfides getting in, leaching into the rivers and streams and eventually flowing into Lake Superior and the Kikagan Sloughs, which some call the Everglades of the North, will affect the wild rice beds. And there's been evidence of this happening from other taconite mining sites off the St. Louis River, where lots of wild rice paddies have died. And a few people gave testimony that their relatives come all the way from Montana for the wild rice on the Bad River Reservation. And that's something that is definitely at stake here because of this legislation. And not only in the Bad River Reservation, this law is statewide and will have statewide implications on the entire waters of Wisconsin. So, this is a specific example that's been highlighted because of the mining project. But this specific mining project, but what happens when more mines want to come in, there'll be more anecdotes of waters affected statewide.
Right. I was reading on your website that the mining process actually leaches all kinds of toxins into the waterways, mm-hmm. such as arsenic and lead and mercury, aside from the sulfides you were mentioning before. And can't that affect our daily life when that's just going right into the water? I mean, that's not just rice paddies, that's, the water you're drinking and the what you're spraying on your vegetables, and it affects everything.
Exactly. More great testimony. A couple of couples were present and gave testimony, a couple from Mellon and a couple that has residence in Waukesha but has had a cabin up about a fourth of a mile from the mining site near the town of Mellon, for the last 18 years, and they're talking about, if the mining site needs all this power, they're going to have to, maybe have coal energy on site, that there's possibility of, that producing mercury, which leaches in the groundwater, aside from whatever mercury would be produced from churning up all the overburden and the taconite pellet processing. And that would have implications on their drinking water, and, not to mention all the noise pollution, light pollution, and different things that will affect their property. And they're giving very passionate testimony. And the only response that these property owners got from Representative Klenke is that, well, GTAC wants to be a more responsible neighbor than you're giving them credit for. You know, they may offer you a healthy offer of money for your property. Right. Well, it doesn't sound like being a good neighbor, but it sounds like we're kicking more people off of their land. But, yeah, that's there's definitely going to be some major implications from mercury, arsenic.
And possibly
leached out.
What about the workers? What about the people who will be employed at the mine? I was reading that in the John Myers, writing for the Duluth News Tribune, was writing about mesothelioma. Now, that, of course, is a fatal lung disease caused by asbestos fibers. And it doesn't show up for like 30 years after you're exposed. So it would take a long time for this to manifest in people who are working at a new mine. But researchers who are studying the death rates in Minnesota at a very similar mine speculate that the asbestos-like fibers within taconite rock that are released during the mining process are causing mesothelioma. And they're actually conducting a $4.9 million study on the death rates and the cause of mesothelioma by the iron mine up in Minnesota. And Dr. Jeffrey Mandel, an associate professor at University of Minnesota School of Public Health, who's leading this study, he says that his analysis shows that mesothelioma rate is considerably higher than it should be around these mines. Is that something that citizens in Wisconsin should be concerned about in regard to this mine?
Definitely. I'm familiar with that study. We put together some, you know, letters for public health professionals just to kind of educate them about the possible public health impacts. And I read some summaries of that study, and I think it's still underway. In but in their preliminary results, I read a statistic that said instances of mesothelioma amongst the workers in these mines is mesothelioma fatalities is about 400% higher than the general population.
Wow.
And that's just, you know, some of the preliminary numbers. It'll be interesting to see the final results of that. But, you know, this is also touched on at the hearing yesterday. The mining being such a boom and bust industry, you know, will we be in the same position, the same economic state that we are right now 50 years from now when the mine closes and leaves? Will citizens, local citizens that get a job there have these same health impacts that a lot of the workers in Minnesota and Michigan have had?
Yeah, and what happens to a community's economy when the mine has run its course and then they leave? It tends to be a kind of a boom and bust scenario whenever there's a mine that opens up. Maybe you get 30 years of jobs. In the meantime, they destroy the environment. Then the mine shuts down and the jobs are gone and you're left with a depraved environment and no jobs.
Mm-hmm. And then you have these health care costs, and
exactly.
Is the company going to pay that for those people? I can speculate, but I doubt it.
And of course, there won't be any Badger care.
that too.
Right. Let's talk about Hurley. You were up there yesterday. Were there a lot of people at that public hearing?
It was full to the brim. The hearing room there. Actually, something I want to share before I forget. It was held at the Hurley Inn, and there's a rec center kind of attached to the Hurley Inn. And on their, digital display board that you can see from the highway, it said, you know, support mining, we support mining. And it's just, you know, you're going in to what seems to be the lion's den here. And, an hour before the hearing was scheduled to start, there was a line, out the front door. The hearing room was packed to the brim, standing room only, elbow to elbow. The overflow room, which happened to have a bar in it, was also full of people. And I think there's some of the unofficial numbers say that over 500 people registered in either, you know, support or opposition to the bill. And I believe unofficially 351 registered against and 237 registered in support of the bill. So there is a really big turnout there.
Well, that's good to know. The public is getting some input, but not enough. What is the status of the bill right now?
Well, this bill is currently in the Assembly Committee on Jobs, Small Business, and the Economy. I've heard rumors today that the chairperson, Mary Williams, is planning an executive session on the bill, which means that the final changes from committee members are due by this Friday, and then next Tuesday they could vote it out of the committee. And there's also been rumors that Speaker Jeff Fitzgerald has scheduled a vote for this bill in the Assembly as early as next Thursday. So it's moving quickly.
That's what they call they're fast-tracking the bill. Isn't that right, Matt? They're fast-tracking it?
Yeah, that's what we've been seeing. You know, literally, when they first announced the hearing in Milwaukee, we got the bill that Thursday. The hearing was the next Tuesday or Wednesday, and, you know, you had the weekend there and to mobilize people and educate them about the bill, to educate ourselves about the bill, you know, it was very difficult. And then you see another undercutting. You know, Representative Janet Buley and Senator Jouk wanted to give the public in northern Wisconsin an opportunity to have their voices heard when initially the Committee on Business, Small Business, Jobs, and the Economy said they were not going to have another hearing up north. So Janet and Bob Jouk scheduled their own hearing for Saturday, January 6th. Then we see a couple of days before their scheduled hearing, the committee comes out and says, oh, well, we are going to have a hearing now, undercutting their efforts and then, you know, giving us 4 days to get people to their hearing. And people had already made all the travel plans to be at the hearing on Saturday, and now they have to switch them or try to take off of work to be at this Wednesday hearing that was held yesterday. So there's lots of confusion. I just confused myself explaining that all to you.
Well, no, it is confusing. They're fast-tracking the bill. The people have not had enough time to really learn about it. You yourself, you know, trying to bone up on it, become an expert, and to communicate what you've learned, you just haven't had enough time. And, of course, with the resources that the proponents of the bill have to push legislation through, they're trying to fast-track the bill.
You know, I guess in summary, what I would say is, as a professional that whose job it is to relay information about bills to the public, this has been one of the most confusing times I've had. They're throwing several different bills at us, these wetlands bills, different mining bills, bills that are specific to Chapter 30 permits, that all kind of do the similar different things to the permitting process, and they have all different timelines, and they're in different committees. We're trying to keep track of all this, and it's just extremely difficult. So how can the general public keep up with all this when professionals can't?
Now, can they turn to your website? Can they go to the Wisconsin League of Conservation Voters and learn about this bill?
Yes, we are keeping it as up-to-date as we can with the information that we're hearing. It's www.conservationvoters.org. And there's an issues tab on the homepage, and just click on that, and you'll see mining there. And we have a whole page dedicated to that with our different press releases. And another thing I'd like to say is that we're going to have a series of announcements about why they should scrap this bill in the next week, so people should keep a lookout for those.
And where should they look? On your website?
We'll have them on our website, and we'll be sending them out to different media outlets around the state. So they should be looking out for those reasons, and some of them we've touched on today, and there's some others that we haven't. So Lots of information. It's a 183-page bill. Lots of bad things, and we need a better solution for Wisconsin.
Well, Matt, I want to thank you very much. Matt Dannenberg from the Wisconsin League of Conservation Voters. Thanks for being our guest today on Health Writers.
Thank you.
Matt was up north in Hurley, Wisconsin yesterday for the Iron Mine hearing there, where events included a Native American drum circle from the Lac des Flambeaux Band of Lake Superior Chippewa Indians. This is Health Writer Steve Blank, and I do want to mention that I interviewed Matt Dannenberg from the Wisconsin League of Conservation Voters, and it's important to know that my wife, Angela West Blank, also works at the Wisconsin League of Conservation Voters. Now, we have just a minute left, and so that pretty much wraps up tonight's program. I did want to quickly read a report that I found on Doc Gurley's website. Jan Gurley is a board-certified internist physician, and she keeps a very funny but informative blog at docgurley.com. And this week she writes about a new study coming out of the National Longitudinal Study of Youth, which shows that obesity has an economic impact, not just because obese people incur greater health costs, but because they earn less than the rest of the population on average. And the findings raise concerns about the reasons for average lower pay for obese people. It reveals that in 2004, obese women made an average of $8,666 less than the general population, and obese men made an average of $4,772 less. This sounds like a topic for a future Health Writers program. But that wraps up tonight's program. Tune in two Thursdays from now at 7 p.m. for our next program. And to listen to past programs, visit our website at www.healthwriters.com. Hey, you too can be a health writer. We're looking for volunteers. So if you're interested, call Glenn here at the station at 256-2001. Good night.